She had dug through the wreckage of the reception area and crawled under the crashed Chrysler, and in about 50 seconds flat she had come up with solid gold. In the shattered remains of a locked drawer, she had found New Age's internal phone directory. Now it was right there on the bed, a thick wad of loose-leaf pages punched into a white three-ring binder, a little battered and covered in dust. The cover was printed with New Age's corporate logo, and most of the pages were printed with names that meant nothing, with matching four-digit telephone extensions. But right at the front of the book was a block diagram detailing the company's various divisions. Names were printed in boxes, and lines connected the boxes downward through all the various hierarchies. The security division was headed by a guy called Alan Lamazon. His number two had been Tony Swan. Below Swan, two lines led to two other guys, and below them, five more lines fanned out to five more guys, one of which had the name Seropian, and who was as dead as Tony Swan in a Vegas hotel foundation. A total staff of 9, 2 down, 7 survivors.
"Turn to the back," Dixon said.
The last section had account numbers for FedEx and UPS and DHL, plus full street addresses and landline phone numbers for two of New Age's operations, which was what courier services needed. The East L.A. Glass Cube, the contracting office up in Colorado, and then, bizarrely, a third address with a note printed in bold and underlined, "No deliveries to this location." The third address was for the electronics manufacturing plant. It was in Highland Park, halfway between Glendale and South Pasadena, 6.5 miles north and east of downtown, 9 miles east of where they were standing, close enough to taste.
"Now turn back a few pages,"
Dixon said. Reacher leafed backward. There was a whole section showing remote telephone extensions out there in the manufacturing plant.
"Check under P,"
Dixon said. The P section started with a guy called Pasco and finished with a guy called Purcell. Halfway through the list was Pilot's Office. Dixon said,
"We found the helicopter."
Reacher nodded. Then he smiled at her. Pictured her, running in with her flashlight, running out 50 seconds later, covered in dust. His old team. He could send them to Atlanta, and they would come back with the Coke recipe. Nagley had personnel files on the whole security division. 9 green file folders. One was Seropian's, one was Tony Swan's. Reacher didn't look at either of those. No point. He started with the top boy, Alan Lamazon. There was a Polaroid photograph clipped to the first sheet inside. Lamazon was a bulky, thick-necked man with dark, blank eyes and a mouth too small for his jaw. His personal information was on the next sheet and showed he had done 20 years inside the LAPD, the last 12 in robbery-homicide. He was 49 years old. Next up were the two guys sharing the third spot in the hierarchy. The first of them was called Lennox, 41 years old, ex-LAPD, gray buzz cut, heavy build, meaty red face. The second was the guy in the raincoat. His name was Parker, 42 years old, ex-LAPD, tall, slim, a pale, hard face disfigured by a broken nose.
"They're all ex-LAPD,"
Nagley said.
"According to the data, they all quit around the same time."
"After a scandal?"
"There are always scandals. It's statistically difficult to quit the LAPD any other way."
"Could your guy in Chicago get their histories?" Nagley shrugged.
"We might be able to get into their computer. And we know some people. We might get some word of mouth."
"What was on Berenson's office floor?"
"A new oriental rug. Persian style, but almost certainly a copy from Pakistan."
Reacher nodded. "Swan's place, too. They must have done the whole executive floor." Negley dialed herself for the call to her Chicago guy's voicemail, and Reacher put Parker's details on one side and checked the photographs of the four remaining foot soldiers. Then he closed their files and butted them together into a neat stack and piled it on top of Parker's jacket, like a category. I saw these five tonight.
What were they like?
O'Donnell asked. Lousy. Really slow and stupid.
Where were the other two?
Island Park, presumably. That's where the good stuff is.
O'Donnell slid the five separated files toward him and asked,
How did we lose four guys to the Keystone cops?
I don't know, Reacher said.
Chapter 65. Eventually, as he knew he would, Reacher opened Tony Swan's New Age personnel file. He didn't get past the Polaroid photograph. It was a year old, and not remotely close to studio quality, but it was much clearer than Curtis Mawney's video surveillance still. 10 years after the Army, Swan's hair had been shorter than when he was in. Back then, the craze for shaved heads had already started among enlisted men, but hadn't spread upward to officers. Swan had worn a regular style, parted and brushed. But over the years it must have thinned, and he had changed to an all-over half-inch Caesar. In the Army it had been a chestnut brown. Now it was a dusty gray. His eyes were pouched, and he had grown balls of fat and muscle at the hinges of his jaw. His neck was wider than ever. Reacher was amazed that anyone made shirts with collars that size, like automobile tires.
What next?
Dixon asked in the silence. Reacher knew it wasn't a genuine inquiry. She was just trying to stop him reading, trying to spare his feelings. He closed the file, dropped it on the bed well away from the other files, in a category all its own. Swan deserved better than to be associated with his recent colleagues, even on paper. Who knew and who flew, Reacher said. That's what we need. Anyone else can live a little longer.
When will we know?
Later today. You and Dave can go scope out Highland Park. Negley and I are going back to East L.A. in an hour. So take a nap and make it count.
Reacher and Negley left the motel at 5 a.m. in separate Hondas, driving one-handed and talking to each other on the phone, like commuters everywhere. Reacher said he guessed that when the alarm call came in, Lamazon and Lennox had headed straight for Highland Park. Standard emergency protocol, he figured, because Highland Park was the more sensitive location. The attack in East L.A. might have been nothing more than a decoy. But an uneventful night would allay those fears, and they would head to the scene of the real crime around dawn. They would declare the glass cube unusable for normal operations and give everyone the day off, except for department heads, who would be called in to inventory the damage and list what was missing. Negley agreed with his analysis, and she grasped the next part of the plan without having to ask, which was one of the reasons why Reacher liked her so much. They parked 100 yards apart on different streets, hiding in plain sight. The sun was over the horizon and the dawn was gray. Reacher was 50 yards from New Age's building and could see his car reflected in the mirror glass, tiny and distant and anonymous, one of hundreds dumped all around. There was a flatbed truck backed up to the wrecked reception area. A steel cable snaked inside into the gloom. The guy called Parker was still there in his raincoat. He was directing operations. He had one foot soldier with him. Reacher guessed the other three had been sent up to Highland Park to relieve Lamazon and Lennox. The flatbed's cable jerked and tightened and started hauling. The blue Chrysler came out of the lobby backward, a lot slower than it had gone in. It had scars on the paint and some front-end damage. The windshield was starred and a little concave, but overall the car was in excellent shape. As subtle as a hammer, as vulnerable as a hammer. It came to rest on the flatbed, and the driver strapped the wheels down and drove it away. As soon as it was out of the lot, its undamaged twin drove in. Another blue 300C, fast and confident. It stopped just inside, and Alan Lamazon climbed out to inspect the smashed gate. Reacher recognized him instantly from his file photograph. In the flesh, he was about 6 feet tall and could have been 240 pounds. Big shoulders, small hips, thin legs. He looked fast and agile. He was dressed in a gray suit with a white shirt and a red necktie. He was holding the necktie flat against his chest with one hand, even though the weather wasn't windy. He took a brief look at the gate and climbed back in his car and drove on through the lot. He got out again just short of the shattered doors, and Parker came over in his raincoat and they started talking. Just to be sure, Reacher took out the phone he had brought back from Vegas and redialed. 50 yards away, Lamazon's hand went straight to his pocket and came out with a phone. He glanced at the caller ID on the screen and froze. "Got you," Reacher thought. He wasn't expecting an answer. But Lamazon picked up. He flicked the phone open and brought it up to his face and said, "What?" "How's your day going?" Reacher asked. "It only just started," Lamazon said. "How was your night?" "I'm going to kill you." "Plenty of folks have tried," Reacher said. "I'm still here." "They aren't." "Where are you?" "We got out of town safer that way. But we'll be back. Maybe next week. Maybe next month. Maybe next year. You better get used to looking over your shoulder. That's something you're going to be doing a lot of." "I'm not scared of you." "Then you're a fool," Reacher said, and clicked off. He saw Lamazon stare at his phone and then dial a number. Not a callback. Reacher waited, but his phone stayed silent, and Lamazon started talking, evidently to someone else. 10 minutes later, Lennox showed up in another blue 300C. Black suit, gray buzz cut, heavy build, meaty red face. The other, number 3, Swan's Junior Parker Zequel. He was carrying a cardboard tray of coffee and disappeared into the building. 50 minutes after that, Margaret Berenson showed up. The Dragon Lady. Human Resources. 7 o'clock in the morning. She was in a mid-sized silver Toyota. She made a right off the roadway and drove through the lot and parked neatly in a slot close to the door. Then she picked her way inside through the wreckage. Lamazon came out briefly and dispatched the remaining foot soldier to the gate for sentry duty. Parker made a second line of defense at the door. He was still in his raincoat. 2 more managers showed up. Probably financial and the building super, Reacher figured. The sentry waved them through the absent gate, and Parker checked them in at the door. Then some kind of a CEO showed up. An old guy. A Jaguar sedan. Deference at the gate, a ramrod posture from Parker. The old guy conferred with Parker through the Jaguar's window and went away again. Clearly, he had a hands-off management style. Then the scene went quiet, and it stayed quiet for more than 2 hours. Halfway through the wait, Dixon called in from Highland Park. She and O'Donnell had been on station since before 6 in the morning. They had seen the 3 foot soldiers show up. They had seen Lamazon and Lennox leave. They had seen workers show up. They had driven all around the plant on a 2-block radius for a fuller picture. "It's the real deal," Dixon said. "Multiple buildings, serious fence, excellent security, and it's got a helipad out back with a helicopter on it, a white Bell 222. At 9:30 in the morning, the Dragon Lady left. She picked her way through the mess and stood on the shallow step outside the reception area for a moment and then headed back toward her Toyota. Reacher's cell phone rang. The Radio Shack pay-as-you-go, not the Vegas guys. It was Nagley.
"Both of us go?"
she asked. "Absolutely," Reacher said.
You close, me deep. Time to rock and roll.